connecting with the disconnected. I don't have a blanket for you. It's not a blanket that I can say, this is going to work. There is none. My wife kept challenging me, you need to provide a solution. I said, there isn't one. The solution is connecting with Christ. And through that connection with Christ, and if time would allow, I so wish it would. I feel like we're getting ripped off because there's so much inter-dialogue, and we can grow and experience and learn from each other and our experiences and help each other in that just by sharing. So as I started doing this presentation, I asked a few questions. Okay, they wanted me to connect with and talk about Pathfinders. So I'm going to share a couple things. As that wasn't me. No, okay, that's cool. We got time. The question, why and where are our young people going? Recently, as I was working with the Sabbath School class, I sat down with them and I asked them three questions. I said, how do you feel when you come to church? The second question, how do you feel about God and religion? And the third question, if you were in charge of your Sabbath School, what would you do differently? Here's some of their responses. To question number one, how you feel about coming to church. We feel like people here have written us off. These are 13 to 16, 17-year-olds. When I asked what they meant, upon further explanation, one of their Sabbath School leaders had told the young ladies in the Sabbath School they should plan on being pregnant shortly after they graduate from high school. One of them was my daughter. She said, Dad, is that what they really think of us? I said, well, I'm not here in this house. But somebody else said, the church is hypocritical. We are constantly being told what we need to do and how we are supposed to love and respect other people, but we are not treated with love and respect. Question number two, how do you feel about God and religion? It doesn't really make any sense to me. When I asked them if they shared their doubts and struggles, they replied, I don't feel like I can do that without being judged. This is coming from these kids. Last one, I don't know how to relate to the Bible. Question number three, they would not be teenagers if they did not say this. If you were in charge of your Sabbath School, what would you do differently? Food. I would have food every Sabbath morning. Yeah, definitely dealing with teens, aren't we? The next answer may surprise you. We want to be involved in more than just collecting offering. We want to be of service. We want to get into the community and do something. We want to make a difference.
It's back.
It's back,
right?
It's back?
Cool. What did I do with it? There it is.
So that brings us to that. These are the kids that are leaving the church. Why? These needs aren't being met. If teenagers, they have a desire to question. And if we can't answer those questions in church, where do they go? Google. Quick story, and I know we're going to run short on time, but I never put myself as I'm the presenter. I'm just doing what God wants me to do, and whatever comes out, He's in charge, not me. So to emphasize this point, we have a new program going on where I come from, called A New Kind of Leader Training. Great concept, great program. But right on the cover of the book, it says, what you believe can make a difference in somebody else. With young people, it's not about what you believe. It's what they believe and whether or not they have ownership of what they believe. Okay? But we constantly have this idea that we need to give them everything and just tell them and mold them and everything else. So, great program, but it's missing the mark. It's not listening and understanding and empathizing and comforting and just meeting the need of where these kids are at. So I think I ran off of that one, so moving forward. Here, six reasons why young people are leaving the church. Isolationism, and I'm going to cover each one of these individually. Shallowness, anti-science, sex, exclusivity, and doubters. Of these six, the most common ones and the ones that I have personally dealt with are shallowness, exclusivity, and doubters. What that means. Shallowness, young people think church is boring, irrelevant, Biblical concepts are unclear, and God is absent from their church experience. Next one, exclusivity. It's exclusive. It does not agree to disagree, and I'm forced to choose between my faith and my friends. One person my wife and I have worked with stated it like this: I feel like church is a private club. If I do not believe exactly as they do in every way, I will never be accepted. And this is both from a young person and somebody outside the church that we worked with in the secular community, who, ironically, if you're dealing with alcoholics and addicts, many of them do come from a Christian background, whether it be Sunday or Sabbath. They were raised in homes. And when you finally get in and hear their story, the home they were raised in, their concept of God the Father, was abusive, was beating on them, beating on mom, maybe even sexually abusing them. And this is concept of God the Father. And then they go to church and they hear how God is love. Contradicts, a total break. Next one, doubters. Young people think church is not a safe place to express doubts. And we just talked about this. Many young people, both in and out of church, have serious doubts they want to discuss, but they have no one they feel they can trust to talk to. There's another statistic, and this is old. This is from 2012. 6 out of every 10 young people will leave the church permanently starting at the age of 15. Barna Group, I'm sure most of you know who that is. In the Adventist Church, we don't have that problem. We have thriving young teenage programs. 13 and 15-year-old teenage class is packed. Why? Parents are forcing them to come, and teens feel like it's not worth the argument. They're there in church, right? Great, they're here. This is the problem. They've checked out up here. Remember my story? They're still living my story from last night. I checked out at 15 and went through the motions. I was able to fake it. And I guarantee you, and I've asked, I've stood up in front of class, shared my story, and said, how many of you feel differently? Nobody raised their hand. So they still feel that way. It's still the problem. They've disconnected up here. And that's the dangerous part, because we don't know. John 4:53 states, look around you and see how the fields are ripe for harvesting. Jesus had to teach this concept to his disciples. Today we are here because we recognize this fact, both in the youth that are leaving our church and our inability to reach out and connect with the unchurched. So it's not just our young people we can't connect with, it's the people outside the church and the community we're having trouble reaching. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. This statement is just as true and applicable today as it was when Christ first got here. The following 3 reasons make this statement still applicable. Today's society, people are needing and seeking out a satisfying worldview, and the most important one, and spiritual fulfillment. If you have a hard time understanding this one, go spend a weekend with a bunch of secular bikers. Let me tell you what, they're searching. And so is everybody else. The social media idea and all this knowledge highway that we have that I didn't have growing up has disconnected us from human relationship. And they are searching out an understanding. This world is getting pretty scary. And people are kind of wondering what in the world's going to happen. Doomsday people, all this stuff is flying around. People are looking and they're searching for answers. This is what was happening when Christ showed up. It's the same thing Rome was doing to the Israelites. They were searching, they were looking. What is being offered isn't enough. There's something more. Second reason, many churches fail to gather a harvest because they cannot perceive what the harvest is. Most churches continue doing church as usual, assuming that most people in the community are Christians. Somebody's using a microphone.
Presentation that in some way integrate one another.
Further, why? Assuming that their ministry is merely the nurturing and caring of said Christians.
First point that we have to teach to our members.
Often church leaders and their members are either in denial or simply choosing to ignore the number of pre-Christians, unchurched Christians, and hurting young people both in the church and the community. More often than not, many of these do not even know many unchurched people. And there's another problem that I didn't identify that I think we should look at. Just because they're in our church doesn't mean they're a Christian. Okay? And that's we need to recognize that fact as well. Just because they're a warm body showing up does not mean that they're connected, the way they're supposed to be. Christianity has too few laborers is the next one, third reason, to gather the harvest. And most traditional churches, including my own, and if this is not familiar in yours, I'm speaking in general, we ask our members to share the good news and invite people to church or various outreach programs our church is conducting. Our members either don't do it, or they go out the day of, hand out flyers about the event, return to the church, and that's it. We're done. The challenge with that is the community's watching. They see them go every week, and then you go out one day a week, say, God is love and we care, but we only see you once a year. As leaders, we gently push and prod our members to share their faith and invite. They don't do it, and that comes from the thought. We're doing it right now. We're talking about how we need to get out there. But our members still aren't doing it. We may even provide good evangelism training. Our members take the training, they like it, and believe that sharing their faith is important, but they still don't do it. Why is this? Two reasons. Many, including my wife and I at one time, have attempted to labor and have come out of the harvest empty-handed. When we first started doing the biker ministry, we went out with Steps to Christ books. And this is the way I was raised. I was raised with in-gatherings. Pathfinders, we would go out, you know, and do the in-gathering thing, and we would hand out books. That's the way I was raised. I left the church and came back. That was my concept of evangelism. So I went to a bunch of bikers, and we put our name inside the Steps to Christ book, and we would go offer it. That's religion. I don't want anything to do with it. Kind of like the pineapple story. I don't want anything to do with that. 2 years we went through this, and we're thinking, wow, what are we doing wrong? So we decided, you know what, we're just going to look at how Christ did his ministry. And we're going to emulate that, and we're going to get out of God's way, and we're just going to go. We're going to go hang out with the people and just fellowship with them and not even worry about a spiritual agenda. Our spiritual agenda was like Christ. Build a relationship. Meet people and find out what their needs are. Just be empathetic with them, comfort, whatever it is. Laugh, cry, mourn. That was our agenda. And let me tell you a short story. I could give you the long version. That was the weekend we got to participate in a harvest. We actually prayed somebody through the sinner's prayer, and he accepted Christ, and God showed up. The most amazing experience I've ever had. Truly. The result of the first, many traditional churches are no longer able to reach, receive, retain, and grow receptive people key in their own individual ministry areas. We are one body made up of many different parts. We have teachers, we have evangelists, we have prophets, we have apostles, we have preachers. That's all the five of them, right? Each person has their own ability, and together we make a whole. But what we're doing right now, and we're failing here, is because each person feels like they need to do all five. It doesn't work that way. We bring people into the church, we baptize them, we give them the studies, and the minute we baptize them, we cut the umbilical cord and we cut them loose into the congregation. Christ spent 3 years discipling his disciples. 3 years training them. And let me tell you from personal experience, I may have had a bad 3 days before my baptism, but the attacks were worse after I recommitted my life to Christ. I started, yeah, God really loves you. Look at this 10 years you spent in a bottle. You spent doing all this stuff. My mind started doing this on all of that stuff. And it's true. The minute somebody makes a commitment to Christ, the devil's there. Yeah, right. You think God can love you after this many years of sin? Forget it. They get attacked harder and they need more support after they commit their life to Christ. We have to be there to disciple them. Because of this, times have changed. Many of us still assume that what inspired us or encouraged us is going to do the same thing for somebody else. What worked to reach us will work just as good to reach them. They already know what we are talking about. And those we are witnessing to will like the church enough to be able to respond positively to our effort. Something that's interesting in all of this. It's all about us, isn't it? Our approach to this is all what we think should be happening. Even here, our effort. It's not about our effort. It's us answering and being played by God the way he knows we need to be used. Harvesting and nurturing has changed, and we have no idea how to harvest or nurture the change. So we go with what we know.
We attempt to do the same thing. Sometimes we wrap it up in a shiny new package, and it may appear to work for a moment, but in the very near future, it just collapses again. So frustrated, failing to gather a harvest, and often unbeknown to us, even though we have the best of intentions, we brutally damage or destroy whatever sprouts may have been developing. And again, this is from personal experience working with people in the secular community as well as our youth. The question is, what are people, youth, both church and unchurch, perceiving when they experience traditional church? The gravitational pull of our human nature is self-serving. It does not look to serve others. Church congregations are made up of humans. And unless we form an intentional and personal intimate relationship with Jesus, we're going to continue to be human. The church as a body is going to follow that suit and seek to focus its own perceived needs and its wants. Unchurched as well as our youth are seeing this hypocrisy. They are hearing the words but not seeing the actions. Unless we are willing to be honest about ourselves and our shortcomings, giving up on the idea that we need to be the perfect example of Christianity, we talked about this last night, and begin our walk with Christ at the center of our personal life, we will never be anything more than a Pharisee. Because remember, that was their approach. I know the law. That is going to get me into a relationship with Christ. And we all know how that panned out with Jesus and his relationship with the Pharisees. Nothing is clearer than that. And then when the rich young ruler came up, this young ruler was challenging God or Christ and saying, show me where I've erred. He didn't even address the first four commandments, which is dealing with relationship. He went straight to the last six. You have no compassion for humankind. That's where you're falling short. You're keeping the law, that's all well and good, but you're not keeping it because of your love for me. You're keeping it because of your love for yourself. So our solutions have been one of the following two. Typically, this is what it was. When I was growing up, we ignore it. This might sound familiar. We ignore the situation, hoping that youth and young adults will somehow right themselves when they are older and have their own children. Anybody ever heard that before? Yeah. Guess what? All this advertises to the young people is that leaders, parents, and church members have missed the significance of the times and the needs of the young people, choosing instead to call it a phase that they will hopefully grow out of. The truth is, and this is why we're here, it's been going on far longer than I'm sure we care to admit. The second, we exhaust all efforts to appeal to the teens and young adults. Great, we've recognized the need and are addressing the problem. But this approach excludes the older members. It builds the church on the perceived preferences of the young people, entertainment, and not on the pursuit of a personal, intimate relationship with God. In a church that we were once attending and working in, one response from the parents and a pastor was, hey, at least they're in church. The truth behind this particular group, two of the girls in this particular Sabbath school became teen mothers, pregnant by two of the boys in that Sabbath school, and half a dozen others are now into drugs, crime, and have left the church. But they were there. In truth, I think it goes beyond perceived needs and wants, and maybe it boils down to preferences. Have any of you ever tried to lead beyond the preferences of the church members? Raise your hand if you've tried. And what I mean by tried to implement what we're talking about this weekend. We were working in a church in California that they were trying to do this, and it got ugly. In fact, it got so bad that when the pastor tried to do this, I was working with the youth and going to board meetings. Our voicemails blew up from a patriarchal member and his following. Our emails blew up. We started having meetings. The church was called into a general session by the head elder. The pastor was put in front of the pulpit like a firing squad. All the elders were here. That's how bad it got. It was ugly. It was terrible. Many of the church members feel like it is their right to have the church fit into their tastes and whims, and the church body as a whole suffers because of it. This doesn't work. Three reasons. If we continue to try and operate this way, this method of Christianity is killing the church. Attendance is stagnant or on the rapid decline. We've already identified that. We're here as people drift further and further from Christ. In fact, if we're to be honest, this is less of practicing Christ-likeness. In fact, we're making the same mistakes again as the Pharisees did. We're replicating them exactly. This one requires no explanation. We cannot please everybody in our church. And if we're trying, we're wrong. Because the bottom line, when our preferences begin causing people to leave the church and keeps unchurched people from the promise of Christ and God's free gift of salvation, it's time to change our preferences. And our preference should be Christ in the center. Funny story, my wife and I are very passionate. She hates the way I drive. She thinks I should be going one direction, which is shorter, point A to point B. I personally, I'm a biker. It's about the journey, not the destination. I don't care. So she constantly criticizes how I drive. And one day, we were driving somewhere, and she started in on me, and it hit me. I'm like, you know what? I'm just not going to argue with an opinion. There's no point. Because when we argue with an opinion, we're just trying to be better than the other person and put them down so we can be right. A lot less passionate discussions after we came to that conclusion that we should just stop arguing about opinion. I understand she doesn't like how I drive. She understands I'm going to drive how I drive. But this transfers into our Christian experience, doesn't it? Board meetings, most volatile place. And when I was on board meetings, I'd go in there and I'm like, where is Christ in this mess? I mean, it's not there. And then we sit back and we look at the example in the New Testament about the apostles writing, do not be divisive and all of this, and what Christians are supposed to be like and what non-Christians are going to be like. And you sit there and you're like, wow, we're living this right now. But you can't stand up and say, okay, where's Christ? So, you know, what do we do about all this? Vince Lombardi. How many of you remember that this is the football speech? Vince Lombardi was an amazing coach, and he probably still today is recognized as the most phenomenal football coach there ever was. Is that my timer? It is. Sorry. Let me zip to the end. Talk faster. Vince Lombardi, the story behind this, in the preceding seasons... Okay, sue me. I said last night, this is God's schedule. This is good stuff. We got gypped. The Green Bay Packers in the preceding season had lost a substantial lead to the Philadelphia Eagles. This is 1961. Because they all summer long, they were just stressing on this. So Vince Lombardi stands up in front of 38 professional football players spring training, and he says, guess what? We're going to go back to basics. This is a football. 6 months later, they would defeat the New York Giants 37-0. And never again would they lose a playoff game. In fact, they would go on to win 5 championships in 7 years, 3 in a row. He never coached a team with a losing record. Why? And here we go. As Christians, our fundamental is developing our personal intimate relationship with Christ. That's what it always has been. That's what he taught the disciples. That's what the disciples did with him. And I have to ask this, and I'm not trying to be antagonistic. Please, believe me, I'm not. When did we lose sight of that? This is where we're supposed to be at. If we were doing this, it worked. Do Christ's math. He started with 4. He got to 12 disciples. And then he got to 120 in a room that was praying. And then he jumped to 3,000 in one day. That's his math. That's his work, not ours. And trust me, I know that can still happen today if we would plug back into what we should plug into. Here's the result of that focus. We will be an open conduit that will allow Christ to use us when and where he knows we need to be used. We will begin to emulate his love and compassion to others. We will begin connecting with them in a way that will attract and not push away. So I'm going to jump to the end. How did Jesus connect? Here we go. 6 connecting points. And if you look at the ministry of Christ, this is exactly what he did. Whenever he approached somebody one-on-one, he affirmed them. He affirmed them as a human being. He accepted them for where they were at. They didn't have to meet a bunch of standards to be accepted by him. Come as you are right now. I will make the change. He appreciated them. And we see this when Christ was baptized. God appreciated Jesus. This is my son in whom I'm well pleased. Paul writing a letter to the Romans. He says to the Romans, I'm going to paraphrase it because of time. I love you. Here's what I appreciate. And he lists that the whole world is talking about you. When we this is called positive coaching. When we affirm positive, we spend a whole lot less time having to correct the negative. And this is positive coaching. Affection, appropriate affection. Every single time Christ was one-on-one with somebody, there was a physical touch involved. He knelt down with a leper. He helped them up. He put salve on the eyes. There was always, he put the child on his lap. There was always affection. And in a world today that is starving for affection, there's where our teens are going. They're looking for it because they're not getting it here. They're trying to fill a God-shaped hole that they don't know how to fill, so they're seeking anything and everything to do it. Availability, they were available. When you start working with alcoholics and addicts and your phone rings at 2 o'clock in the morning and your wife says, I'll go put on a pot of coffee. I spent 2.5 hours talking to somebody because they were having a crisis and needed to go drink. And our goal was to not go drink. Available. Christ always made himself available. Nicodemus, the rich young ruler, the children, the list goes on and on. The Samaritan woman at the well. And finally, accountability. And I zip through to the end. So then each of us shall give account of himself to God. And this is so important, and I'm going to kind of conclude with the last slide with this. This is the question as I talk about accountability. Our relationship with Christ, personal and intimate, is what we're going to be held accountable to. Remember that Christ met us and he says, okay, I'm not going to know you if you don't know me. If you haven't spent the time to get to know me, I don't know you. It's not through anybody else. Abraham had a covenant with God. Then God had to make a covenant with Isaac. Then God had to make a covenant with Jacob. Because it doesn't transfer. It's individual. And this is where I think we need to get back to basics. It's not a football. It's Christ for us. And again, this is a topic. Stewardship's a topic. You and I were right on the same page. I was sitting there going, man, we could have done this together. Because they do go hand in hand. We are stewards, and we're not just stewards of money. We're stewards of time. We're stewards of people. We're stewards of how we relate to people. And are we accountable? Are we truly caring for people? And that's what we have to get back to. And like I said last night, unless we start looking at people through God's eyes, and the only way we can do that is to connect with Him, we can have all the programs in the world, and it's just not going to happen. Because it's something we're doing. It's not something we're living. And that's the difference.